Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Code and the Coding Coders Who Code It. I am your host, Drew Bragg, and I'm joined today by the Executive Director of Ruby Central, Ardish Pandit. Ardish, would you please introduce yourself for the listeners who don't know you?
Sure. Hi, I'm Ardish Pandit. We live in California, in Oakland, California, across the bridge from San Francisco. I'm currently the Executive Director at Ruby Central. I've been a board member at Ruby Central since 2019 or 18. And then before that, I was a board member at Ruby Together, which merged into Ruby Central at 2019. That's how I came on board. So I've been a board member there since, I'm going to say 2016 or 15, maybe somewhere around there. So I have a ton of board experience in the Ruby community. And this is sort of my first real operational nonprofit role, which has really been interesting and fun, extremely challenging, but really great time.
I'm interested to get into some of that. It'll be a little different than how the show normally goes, but the questions will be the same. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the format of the show, I'm going to ask three questions. What are you working on? What kind of blockers do you have? If you don't have a recent blocker, you tell us about a recent blocker that you had and how you went about solving it. You can speak on the things that you're individually working on or on behalf of Ruby Central as a whole. And then the last question's open-ended, doesn't have to be coding related, but it certainly can be. It's just something cool, new, or interesting that you've recently learned or discovered. So I'm going to shut up now and just ask you the first question. What have you been working on?
I started, just by way of background, I taught myself how to code back in 2011 and then have been working as a developer consultant since then. And as much as I love writing code and shipping PRs, and I miss it greatly, I found that with my previous experience in management consulting, that I ended up being a better fit doing management type things and sales type things. So as a consultant, I do a lot of talking to people and catching up with them, which fits my sort of natural preference as a person. I like to get together and have lunch, coffee with people and just hear what's up. And it turns out that being yourself and having casual friends in the business in which you work is an excellent sales tactic, which I didn't realize until later. So I focused on running and operating since 2015, my own consulting firm. Somewhere in there, I've taken development jobs and written code, but I haven't really been a very active developer for some time now, unfortunately. But I love the questions. What am I working on? Well, I became the executive director of Ruby Central in May of this year. And the previous executive director was somebody that we had brought in from the Linux world. And we have a pretty challenging organization and we have a lot that we want to get done. And it just wasn't the right spot for that person. And last year we went through a whole executive search process with a firm and recruiters and all of that. It's very time intensive and expensive and so on. So I happened to be in a place where I had professional capacity to jump in and say, okay, why don't I do this at least on an interim basis? We had a bunch of things that we needed to kind of reconfigure or clean up. And so I always enjoyed operations. And so I volunteered myself for the role. Or rather, I kind of said to the board, hey, someone, one of us should probably do it. And they all did the like, take one step back without telling me maneuver. But it's been fun. It's been really meaningful. This organization and the Ruby community generally has been a huge force for good in my life, professionally and otherwise, for over a decade. And I know a lot of people share that sentiment. So in whatever way I can, you know, stand in bureaucrat and help this organization foster community and put on conferences and administer open source and hopefully more, I'm happy to do that.
I feel like that's a sentiment for a lot of folks in the Ruby community is just, hey, I love this community. It's done so much for me. I want to find a way that I can give back to it. And sometimes that's straight up open source contribution, writing the code. Sometimes it's just education. Sometimes it's podcasting. I mean, I tried writing blog posts and was just like, I'm good at writing and writing consistently, but I like talking to interesting people and hearing their stories. So if I just record it and release it as a podcast, that's my contribution. So I definitely understand that desire to give back. And I think Ruby Central is an excellent place to do it. What has been taking on the role so recently? What has been the biggest challenge getting up to speed with a role like that.
It's really interesting. As a board member, you really have a arm's length distance from what's going on a day-to-day basis, who's involved and what decisions are made, and you kind of get high-level reports on things. So you can guide and urge and influence in some ways, but you're not as close to what's actually happening. One of the most challenging things was, so before being a developer, I was a management consultant, and I spent many years in Microsoft Excel making lots and lots of financial models for who knows what purpose, but I got very good at that. So I have some experience doing financial projections and looking at P&Ls and cash flow and all that stuff. And so the biggest challenge was kind of bringing all that information into one place and saying, hey, where are we financially and what should we be doing? I mean, the even bigger challenge is sort of thinking about what should Ruby Central be doing? What is our purpose? What kind of activities and programming should we be engaging in? Maybe I'll back up. So by way of saying what we do now and maybe explaining a little bit of history, then I can kind of lead into what we're hoping to do. So Ruby Central started, I think, in some form back in 2003. And it's been conferences and the entity which puts on the conferences since initially it was RubyConf, and then starting in 06, 07 or so with the first RailsConfs, it was that organization that put those on also. O'Reilly was involved. Some other folks were involved on and off. And then about 2012, 2013, it was Marty Hott and Evan Phoenix who started kind of running it in a much more rigorous fashion. And they did everything. They put on all the conferences, made all the decisions, oversaw all the design, the t-shirts, the badges, everything. They did all the work with a team of folks that were helping them also. It's a very tiring thing to put on conferences. And so after a while, they kind of got to a point where they were like, hey, you know, I'm ready to do other things. So Evan moved on from Ruby Central a few years ago. And Marty is looking to have more of an advisory role, let me say. He's done so much for our community, and we certainly appreciate that. And in my time as a director, I have really been working both at Ruby Together, which was a 501c6, which is a trade association. So similar to other organizations like the Dairy Farmers Association, the members of 501c6s all contribute some membership dues or donation on a regular basis. And that is directed to be spent at the benefit of everyone in the community. So Andre created that. I'm switching over now to another organization, but Andre created that in, I'm going to say 2014, 2015, as a means to generate money to spend on Bundler development. So Bundler and RubyGems really kind of became the de facto package management system around 2009, 2010. And he's been on a couple of podcasts recently. You should look for those where he tells the whole gory version of the story, appropriate for the month of Halloween, but it's really fascinating. But all those folks were volunteers. And I don't know if you remember this, it was 2013 or 2014. We had a big outage. It lasted about a week. We had some malware basically uploaded, and then we had to fry everything, erase it, and restart. So the whole Ruby community was without Bundler or RubyGems, able to bundle their gems for, I think, about a week, less than a week, maybe. And all the people working on that had other jobs, families, obligations, hobbies. And all that happened was they got yelled at, right? Well, there were a lot of people that were grateful, but it's thankless work. And a lot of people were like, hey, I don't want to do this anymore. So it was unsustainable. It's an unsustainable thing for everybody in our community to be depending upon this one web service and piece of software 100% of the time without financial support. And so since I met Andre in 2014, 2015, and he said, hey, this is something I'm looking to do, I immediately wanted to be involved and I wanted to help in whatever I could. So I joined the board eventually. And then as time went on, Andre is a developer at heart, and running a nonprofit is a lot of administrivia. It's a lot of paperwork and legal stuff and accounting and disclosures and rules and so on. So it made more and more sense as we talked with Marty at Ruby Central that, hey, why are we duplicating all this work? And so Andre and Marty got together over the course of, I'm going to say, a year and ironed out all the pieces so that Ruby Together could merge into Ruby Central. And then as a result, I was carried over in the board. So Ruby Together was generating enough money to pay for some amount of open source work and to keep the lights on. The servers and the CDN bill and some of that was generously provided by credits from some of those companies, which they still are. Keeping those up to date is a whole other administrative activity as well. So then Ruby Central became this two-pronged organization. So they're putting on conferences and then paying for and administrating open source, which I think makes organizational and strategic sense to have all of those things under one umbrella as much as possible. Then 2020 happened.
And didn't it happen for all of us?
It certainly did. We all had different versions of all of that. My kids both came home and did homeschooling. My wife's a physician, so she suited up and went into the hospital and was treating patients with no PPE. And that whole year was pre-vaccine and all of that. So we had a bunch of intense conversations about our family, and it was unpleasant. But I became primary parent and made sure that everybody was doing okay. It was just really rough on my kids. I think some kids totally responded fine to Zoom school and any of the stress that comes with the pandemic, and my kids definitely did not. So the family decision there was, it's best for me to spend as much time as I can with the kids. The organizational impact was that we had to start canceling and changing our events, right? We started experimenting with online only and hybrid. We tried a few platforms. We went finally back in person in 2021 in the fall in Denver for RubyConf, which was sort of like very tenuous. We were testing everybody and we had a thing outside and everybody had to show things and we had masks on and we were really shaking our fingers at people who weren't, or I think we were injecting them even. Still people, there was still an outbreak and people got sick and it was a mess. So the long and short of it is that like 2020, 21, and now we're into 23, the conference business such as it is has really taken a beating. We've had a lot of folks attend and our numbers are okay, but they're certainly not what they used to be. And I've heard this from other conference organizers. There's a chunk of people for whom going to the conference meant sitting and watching all the talks. And I think those folks are like, you know what? I'm not going to pay for the hotel room and the airfare and the ticket. And I'm just going to wait for the videos and I'll just watch those. And that's fine. And everybody else who's really interested in the hallway track and meeting friends and connecting and going out for a beverage or karaoke or getting that real in-person experience, they're still showing up and they're very passionate. So it's been quite an interesting few years, as they say, right? May you live in interesting times. And so we have responded to that as a board and as an organization as best as we can. I think it's also just been contributed to some of the turnover that we've had in an organization because our goals are changing, the context is changing, what we want out of events has changed. So we've responded, I think, as well as we can. This upcoming RubyConf, for example, we normally do 3 days of talks and workshops. It's very academic in nature. You sit down in an auditorium and the lights are down and someone talks with a PowerPoint. And that is extremely important for a number of reasons. It's great for knowledge sharing. It helps, frankly, justify employers paying for their employees to go because they feel like they're getting trained and they're coming back as smarter developers, which they definitely are. And it is another venue for folks to practice public speaking, especially folks who are not as prominent in the community or have experience talking. I've only done a little bit of conference speaking, but the folks who've been very with it and on the speaker track, every single one you talk to is, it's completely revolutionized my career and it's opened up so many opportunities for me. So it's really an important piece of the conference, but also the blocker really here is like, how do we make an in-person conference worthwhile in today's day and age, right? So the way that we thought about that and tackled it, we have two board members or co-chairs, Allison McMillan and Chelsea Kaufman. Allison and Chelsea thought about this and immediately they were like, we can't do 3 straight days of talks. We're going to pull one day and we're going to do something different. We're going to try and connect people and find some way. And so we brainstormed and kicked around all these ideas and it's taken shape, honestly, in the last month. We have an amazing program committee, maybe one of the best we've ever had, which is a group of volunteers from the community who sign up and help us. Primarily, the job is guide the direction of the conference and also evaluate talks, because that's a big lift. So we had hundreds and hundreds of talk submissions and we have to go through rating them and all of that. And so they generally help with that, but we ask them to say, hey, we want programming help and guidance from the community for this new thing we're going to do on the first day. And we ended up calling it Community Day, and it's going to be really interesting. So we're setting people up who are significant people in our community who are on the Ruby core team, who are doing other versions of Ruby core teams, people who are running gems, people who are running regional Ruby meetups, anybody in our community who has an organization which is serving all of us, or some of us, or most of us. We wanted a chance for them to have a booth or an area and to say, hey, come on by. To me, I thought about it as when I was a freshman in college, there was that student group fair. I don't know if every college had this, but like there was a day when it was like, come join the fencing club, come join the whatever club, right? And it's a little bit like that. You can kind of wander around and meet people. We're going to have setups for pairing. People can hand out their swag if they have some for their project. They can also get environments set up and say, hey, I'm interested in helping to work on Bundler. How do I get set up on this project? So the Bundler team and RubyGems teams, our teams are going to be there also. A whole bunch of other folks that I'm sure you'll know. So it's going to be pretty exciting and it'll be a big experiment. We've gotten a lot of really good feedback from the people who have purchased tickets, from the people who are excited to come, and even our speakers and the program committee. So it's a bit of a roll of the dice, but I think a lot of what we heard from feedback over the past few years has been, well, there's too much content. There's so much content, you can't see it when you're there, and it's even hard to catch up on it afterwards. And the thing I enjoy most is hallway track and meeting up with friends and going to dinner. And so we thought, okay, well, why don't we put the focus there? That's kind of what we're doing. And that's to question one, what am I working on? It's really, it's RubyConf 2023 almost all day, every day. There's a bunch of other stuff that I do. Luckily, open source, Andre's the head of open source, Andre Arco, and he's got everything on lock over there. So I don't need to do too much, but that's really what I'm kind of focused on.
And that's a departure from, we do 3 days of multiple tracks, talks and workshops. And this is what it is. And trying to break that mold, that's tough in and of itself. And I do, just hearing about the idea of this community day, it sounds awesome. And it kind of reminds me, and this is well before my time in the community, but I've heard that either RubyGems or Bundler was born at a RubyConf of just like people sitting around and hacking on this idea they had, and it turned into this thing that we all use. And it's like, it feels reminiscent of that. It feels like a, hey, let's just get people who are smart and motivated and want to work on something cool together and see what happens, see what next awesome thing that the community benefits from everyone being in the same place at the same time. Because we do live in this very remote world now, and there is a degree of, as great as it is, and I don't want to ever go back into an office, but there is a degree of, there's something about working next to a person, sitting there and just, I don't know if it's osmosis, I don't know if it's just the energy in the room or what it is, but there's something about being together that yields some pretty impressive results. So I'm pretty excited to see what happens.
I mean, it's human interaction, right? We are still animals and we're a very social animal. So it makes sense that we need to be in person, even if it's not for any grand aim, just to be in the same space. And it's interesting you mentioned that. I think it's a great point. RubyConf specifically has always, I've actually gone to very few RubyConfs because it's always been so close to Thanksgiving. And so travel for me has gotten challenging. And that's one of the things we're looking at is like, how do we move it further away from winter holidays? So I have a lot less experience with RubyConf than I do with RailsConf personally. I think I've been to almost every RailsConf since 2013. But RubyConf, the vibe, as I understand it, as people explain it to me, is much more of what you're saying. It's much more kind of a hacker vibe where people are kind of just finding a spot on the carpet in the hallway and just being like, hey, check this out, working on projects and getting things started. I'm not sure if RubyGems.org was born, you know, I bet Andre would know that. I think he may have actually said that. I'm going to give you a link maybe to include in show notes.
Yeah, sure.
Because he tells the story much better than I do. But yeah, it's exciting and it's different. And I think we have to adapt, right? We have to adapt to the changing context. Which is pretty exciting. The other thing that I'm working on is introducing and maybe kind of revamping or redesigning our membership program. So Ruby Together's model was, hey, sign up. And we had a Rails app for this at the time, and kick in $10, $20 a month. And that would be super useful to help us keep bundling Ruby Gems going. Once it merged, we changed platforms. We don't do custom software anymore just because it's so time consuming. So we have a program where we have in the hundreds of members who are giving a decent amount to us every month, which is super useful and exciting. It's very sustaining, and it helps us make any sustaining organization, any sustaining donation to a nonprofit makes a much bigger difference than one-off donations. It's reliable income. It helps you get people employed and things like that. We have not done too much in terms of benefits and what it means to be a member. What do you get out of that? So I had a meeting with the Python Foundation folks yesterday. I talked to their sponsorship folks, and then their executive director and I are becoming friends now. So we were trading notes. They were like, how do you run your membership program? How should we run ours? And so we're going to redesign it and probably announce some changes and hopefully sign up more members. One thing that Python does is that they don't require you to be a paying member to be a member of the Python Foundation. You can self-attest that you have made some significant contribution to the community, and then that's enough. They also use that membership as a voting organization. So they vote publicly on board members and changes in bylaws and things like that. That's something that we've talked about doing for a while. It is, in their words, a logistical nightmare. So I think we might take that on maybe in the next year. It might not be something we do right away, including more folks who are writing books or creating content or doing podcasts and things like that. And the membership is sort of one of the goals. And obviously, sponsorships and fundraising is critical too. A lot of what we want to do, or what I want to do, leading the organization, we need funding to do. So there's a lot of low-hanging fruit, like Ruby documentation could use its own project to be updated, right? That's something we are interested in. Back to like educational stuff, we would want to see if there's a way we can get discounts for books and videos and training materials, and maybe make those available to the membership. At Community, by the way, there's going to be a number of content creators in the Ruby community talking also about what that's like. And the pragmatic programmers are going to be there, Dave Thomas and Noel Rapin, and all these authors, all these folks who have like done amazing things. I've read all their books, and I'm sure a lot of us have. And they're just going to be around, kind of milling around for us to talk to. And so I think that'll be really exciting. We want to link up a little bit more with the boot camps and the universities who are teaching Ruby and Rails, because our community will only grow if we have new people learning, right? And Rails Foundation is focused on this too. They're thinking about education and curricula and training materials and tutorials and things like that. So there's a lot we want to do. There's also, we've heard this from the meetups, that they have local enthusiasm, but they don't have enough money for the meetup.com license. So maybe we could get a funding sponsor to get together to say, hey, why don't we pay for that? Or sponsorships and the regional conferences also. Since I started in May and June, I started talking to the other conference organizers in Europe and in Asia, and just saying, hey, is there anything we can do to help? And they were like, yeah, please promote our conference and let us know if you have any good connects with sponsorship companies, and we would love to get help and speakers and stuff like that. So we're all trying to work together a little bit more as a group and as a community. And I think I'm trying to take the name literally and to be a central authority, or not authority, but like an organizing force as much as we can for growing and enriching our community and connecting out to one another.
That's a lot. It is a lot. It's also, like that vision of Ruby Central is the central place to get everything going. And just the idea of more people contributing, like we talked about earlier in the show, about there's so many different ways to give back to a community. Money helps, just like writing code helps, but there are so many ways. So, it's interesting to hear that at least being considered of, hey, what are all the ways that our community benefits from all of these different things? What's everyone doing to raise the tide of our community, which will raise all ships? And how do we help best organize people so that things are a little bit easier to, hey, I want to do a meetup. I want to do a small regional conference. I want to do something. Hey, Ruby Central, can you help me with a step up? Because I hear that from a lot of conference organizers. I've been to two regionals this year. I went to Rocky Mountain Ruby recently, and I went to Blue Ridge, and both were awesome. And both organizers were like, it was so much work. It's a ton of work.
Exactly. The feedback we heard, we had an open conversation with a lot of our community at RailsConf this year, where we were like, what do you want us to do? Where should we go? And the answer was really clear. It was like, we don't need Ruby Central to do everything. We need Ruby Central to enable as much as possible. So for example, one of the best things and the smartest things that I've done in the last couple months is I've been connecting with other nonprofit software foundations who are doing more or less the same programming. And a lot with the Python Software Foundation, they are just a couple years ahead, many years ahead, maybe much larger organization, larger programmer base, but they figured a bunch of stuff out and it's just been great to talk with them. One of the things they do is they have something called a fiscal sponsorship program, where basically they have, I think it's Pi Ladies. I could get this wrong, but so don't at me, but they're like with teaching underrepresented folks to program in Python is, I believe, called Pi Ladies. And I think it either started inside PSF or it became one of these fiscal sponsors of PSF. And so they basically have their own control over their bank account and their programming and all that stuff. And I think that they give some overhead percentage of whatever donations they raise to PSF just for having an accountant and filing disclosures with the IRS and all of that stuff. But otherwise, they kind of just do their own thing. But they also then don't have to have their own lawyer. They don't have to have their own accountant. They don't have to have their own insurance policies, all that stuff. So I'm looking to that model a lot and saying, hey, how can we partner with folks who are interested in that help? I know like a Blue Ridge is a brand new conference, right? So I think I would have liked to have been a lot more helpful than we had been, but we weren't just organizationally in a place for that. But I look at like Madison Ruby with Jim Remsick, and he's done it a million times and doesn't need as much help. So everybody's needs are different. And our hope is not to push the community in a direction, but just to add fuel and fertilizer to things that are already sprouting and growing.
There's a lot of overlap in the things that people say are, hey, it's hard to do X, Y, and Z. And I just want to focus on why this conference is going to be different than the other ones. Or I just want to focus on making sure it's great in this area, but you got to do all this stuff. I know that Rocky Mountain had a lot of trouble with getting the word out. He didn't know where to go to, like, he's like, Twitter, kind of, but like people are leaving Twitter. So where do I post this? And having a way of helping out with that very common problem for all of the people who do X sounds like a great way of helping the community. I also think it's definitely a great idea to talk to the other software foundations and programming language foundations of, hey, how do you guys do it? I love the Ruby community. I think it's great. I don't necessarily want to see it change too drastically, but I also don't want to see it higher get stagnant. So there's always going to have to be a degree of change. So it sounds like that thoughtful and methodical change is going to be how we maintain everything we love about the community without getting stale.
Yeah. And it's just a matter of trying stuff and seeing what works and what doesn't. And necessarily that means that some stuff will just flop and not work. And that's okay. I think we learned that like running a fully hybrid conference is extremely difficult. And again, I've heard this from other people. But yeah, collaborating with other nonprofit software folks has been a game changer. We all more or less have this same type of problems. It's running open source, running conferences, having a membership, doing things like having a travel grant. We haven't had a formal program to grant people travel, especially like established speakers. But we have a scholars and guides program where we have scholars who come to our conferences and we give them a ticket and a travel stipend, and we match them up with a guide who is sort of helping them to meet new people at the conference. And this year, we tweaked these things and we did another experiment. So we're going to find out how that works. So we said, okay, we want the scholar and the guide to collaborate on a tiny micro project of some sort. It could be a blog post. It could be a scavenger hunt where you take pictures with a list of people, right? Or you could open a PR on a repo. You could give a lightning talk. We just left it really open. And so we'll see how that worked. So all of these things, we get feedback like software, right? You make little iterations and you try different things and you ship it and see how well it works in production. The great news is there's tons of goodwill in our community, not just sort of generally. We have great people in our community. They're so kind and thoughtful and caring, and they try really hard to look out for each other and to be considerate and to be inclusive. There's also a ton of goodwill for us as an organization that people recognize, hey, putting on conferences is hard, and trying to do that during the pandemic, I'm sure, is really challenging. And it's certainly been like financially very challenging. And so it's important to be a good steward of that too. I take that seriously, and I try to be as thoughtful as I can with that. And the other neat thing is that people are creative in our community. Again, now I know this because I talk to other communities more, or the foundations at least. And I think more people in our community come from a theater background or an arts background, or I know more than a few people who are like deep into what I now call fiber arts. I didn't realize it was that was the official name, but like knitting and yarning and yarn development and like cross stitch and all of that. There's, I don't know if you've seen any of the talks on like how those are basically algorithmic based arts, but like you basically plug algorithms into looms. Anyway, there's this neat stuff happening, and we're going to have some artsy surprises also at the conference, which should be kind of fun. But yeah, it's a work in progress. It's something we're trying, and we always could use help. We always use more members and certainly more sponsors, but come to the conference. I think it actually will be a lot of fun. It's going to be in San Diego. It's going to be nice and sunny, and we're closing in on 500 people, which is about what we had aimed for, which is nice. And then we have a ton of unofficial events, which should be cool. There's always karaoke, which is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have some really good singers in our group. It's a neat place to be, and it's a neat way to feel like I'm giving back to the community that's given me a lot.
Yeah, the Philly RB's monthly meetup is normally virtual, but since I run Philly RB basically, and I will be at RubyConf, we're going to do like an unofficial in-person Philly RB, and anybody who's there can hopefully swing by. But that's one of the little things that I've always enjoyed, is the after each day, there's always stuff going on. You can bounce between things and see all the people. And so I'm pretty excited for RubyConf this year. It sounds like there's a lot of new stuff without being completely different, which is always a nice balancing act.
Yeah.
So I am also encouraging everyone to go and come and hang out, and it'll be a good time.
Are you a Phillies fan? Is that
no,
sounds like that's going
no,
well?
No, I don't know.
Oh.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I don't really watch Phillies baseball. The only sport I really watch is hockey, which is the Flyers, which is just not anytime soon. Will that be great? But
I'm a Red Wings fan, so I feel that pain.
Okay. Yeah, you know exactly how I feel. It's just every year it's like you get a little bit of hope and then you're just like, ah, never mind.
Well, we fail in the playoffs regularly, first round. So that's,
well, at least you make the playoffs.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I guess that's good, but it's so regular.
All right, so we've talked about all the things that you're working on, which is quite a bit, and many different disciplines, and touched on blockers too. Is there any other blockers that you want to make sure we talk about that you find particularly fascinating, challenging, or that were fascinating and challenging and that you want to talk about going through the solutions?
The biggest blocker is like, how do you think about community? What is community? It's like you start to kind of peer into this topic, like you have a feeling of what you think community is, or you know it kind of when you see it or when you're in it, but it's really a delicate thing. And it takes the participation of lots of people to be involved. It takes a couple of people to organize. And I mean, any kind of community, if it's like your trivia team or your bowling league or your neighborhood pizza party or whatever. It's a very interesting thing to think about all the time, but it's also very hard to make happen. I met a guy who was very involved in community at Lego. And he told me something important, which was like, you can't actually create community. You can find it and encourage it. So people will find each other in some way. And as a community organizer, which I think is sort of what my job is now, the only thing you can really do is provide a venue, a space, and snacks and coffee and drinks and a little bit of structure. And what you want to do is enable, like I said, in a sort of broader way, you want to enable things more than try to be too directive about it. Somebody gave me this book, which is The Art of Gathering, which I thought was really, Marty from our team gave it to me. And it's about events And like, there's a science to events. There's like, who do you include? Who do you not include? How do you describe the purpose? What density of people is appropriate before people feel like there's nobody at the party? I don't think these are blockers, but they're just like maybe interesting, challenging things to think about. Have you experienced any of this with Philly RB?
Yeah, I kind of took Philly RB over just because the original organizers kind of just had run out of steam with it. One had moved. He was living in Japan. He was actually still helping to run it, but it was like 10 a.m. his time. He's like just getting a workday started and he's logging on just to help make sure that people were getting in and weren't having a problem with the piece of software we're using because we're still fully remote. And I just kind of stepped in, was like, hey, I'm here to help, whatever. And he's like, great, can you run it? Because I kind of can't do this anymore. I was like, yeah, I can. And it's been interesting. We have more people show up from all over the world than we do from inside of Philly, which is part of the reason why I don't think we'll ever go back to fully in person. It'll either be we do virtual and in person or we do something else. But yeah, we have people from South America, from Europe, from we've had South Africa show up. We've had all different time zones just come and hang out. And it's been great. The conversations are always awesome. But yeah, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just like, I will turn on the thing and we will meet up and we will just see who shows up and what we start talking about and hope it goes well. And it's been going well. I just, like I said, I have no idea what I'm doing. So it's an interesting challenge.
And that's the other weird secret is that no one knows what they're doing, right? Like everybody's kind of making it up as they go along. And even as I talk to other people who are running meetups, they're kind of like, yeah, we don't know. Like some months we do no programming, we just get together and have a drink. Some months it's very structured and lightning talks. And some months it's like live coding. You know, they just try different stuff. And again, it kind of just comes back to what is the purpose? Who do you want to include? What are they getting out of it aside from just being in the same room and chatting with each other? Which is like, once I think if you facilitate that, that's a lot of it. You should send me a link, by the way. I'd love to join sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll send it to you. I will include it in the show notes. But yeah, it's always the second Tuesday of every month. So like I said, second Tuesday of November will be RubyConf. So that's where our meetup will be because I won't be here to click the button. And a lot of the people who've been consistently showing up will be in San Diego anyway. So it's like, what other better time will there be to still have a worldwide meetup, not virtual?
Yeah, a lot of people are doing their own things. I know some of the sponsors are getting together and throwing happy hours. Rooftop Ruby is putting on a little party. There's a lot of opportunity for that stuff too. And a lot of that's getting organized in the conference goer Slack, which is very active, by the way, already, which is neat.
Yeah. Is there going to be a, I know Mike Perim used to put it together. I don't remember if he did it last year or not, but just like a list of like, here are the events going on during the conference. Do you know if he's going to do that again? Are you guys going to take it over? Or is there going to be a centralized place to find all the things?
So for legal reasons, because I asked my lawyer about this, she was very clear and she was like, look, you cannot officially endorse any unofficial activities which are not on the conference grounds or you will be legally and insurance-wise liable. So you also can't require attendance at those things. We can, I think, go and participate and like in an unofficial capacity as a human being, I can be like, I'm going to go to Ruby Karaoke or whatever. But I think as an organization, we can't use our megaphone to promote those things. However, some people have asked me, hey, is it okay if I make a list of these things? And I've been like, sure. As long as you specify that this has nothing to do with us legally.
Got it.
Not to be too like nitpicky about it, but you know, when you're sitting in this chair, you have to think about all these things, unfortunately.
Those are things that I would not think about, but that's why I ask the questions, because I never know what the answer is going to be. No, it's cool. I think those are, like you said, not necessarily a blocker, but still an interesting challenge of building a community. So as you've, it could be something that you've recently learned or it could be something that you've learned just through years of experience, but what is something cool, new, interesting that you've learned or discovered or working on that you wanted to share we haven't talked about yet?
So anybody who follows me on any kind of social channel probably has figured out that I enjoy riding bicycles. So when March 2020 happened, we started entering a stressful time as a family. And I thought to myself, okay, if I'm going to be home with the kids full time and my wife is in this life or death kind of work situation, I think I need some kind of healthy outlet. That's probably something I should implement. I never have been somebody who exercises regularly. I just never figured out what the right thing was for me. And I'd always loved bicycles. I'd never really gotten serious about it. And then I bought a road bike then and I started riding and I felt better immediately. I felt happier. I was able to socialize. So even those early days, we kind of were like, well, the wind's going past us. So if we're biking and then talking, maybe that's safe. So that became a safe way to socialize with some other folks from my neighborhood who taught me the ropes and like the basics of it. Here's how you clip your shoes into the thing. And I was like, okay, you got to get these weird funny pants and all of that. And I got really into it. Really did a lot for my physical health and mental health. And then I signed up for a charity ride from San Francisco to Los Angeles in 2021. And I don't know why I did that. I just was like, sure. Why? You know, a friend of mine said, if you want to get better, you should sign up for one of these, like kind of like the bike version of a marathon. And then you train toward it. So then you have a goal and it sort of forces you to do something. And I was like, okay. And then I signed up for this thing, which is 530 miles and 8 days.
That's a lot of miles.
And then he was like, I didn't. Yeah, that's not what I meant. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, there were no other events in 2021 other than this one. I tried to sign up for shorter ones, but they just all canceled at that time because they weren't sure what to do. So I did it. And actually, I did it 2 more times. I just finished it a couple weeks ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm really deep into bicycles and bicycle culture. What I find neat is go on an Instagram and seeing like all the different ways around the world that people take this weird little 150-year-old machine that can take you from place to place under your own power and turn it into something cool, like lowrider bicycles or SE bicycles. There's a whole youth culture around different bikes. There's bike messenger culture everywhere. There's road bike culture. There's mountain bike culture. It's, I don't know, I just like all of that. And now I'm in parent cargo biking culture. So I got an e-bike, I think 1.5 years ago, with a big kind of long benchy thing on the back. And so I could put my kids back there and take them to school every day. They love it. They ring the bell. We have a little Bluetooth speaker. So we play silly songs and all that. I have a basket in the front. So now it's 90% replacing one car. So I can go do errands and pick up groceries and go to the doctor and all that stuff. It's just, I can't recommend it enough. If you're in a place that is conducive to it, just go to the e-bike store, take one out for a spin, and it's hard to have it not put a smile on your face.
Sounds awesome. Putting a smile on my face just talking about it. And so it's why it's pretty much my favorite question of the show, because no matter what, it's someone enthusiastically telling me about something, and that is always a great just segment. Someone enthusiastic about anything is always just awesome to listen to. So I appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, I'm going to try and do some kind of group bike ride at RubyConf. Again, unofficial event, but
unofficial.
We did one at Portland RailsConf. I forgot what conference that was, but we did one in Portland, and it was like a donut and coffee tour, which was super cool. So we went around and tried all the different Portland fancy donuts and fancy coffees.
Nice.
And I made a bunch of friends along the way, which is cool.
Very cool. I don't think I'll be able to join because I don't think I can fit my bike on a plane, but it sounds cool.
Oh, we'll get rentals.
That was my next question, is like, how do you get a bike in across the state?
That's an interesting challenge. There's no like Airbnb for bikes that's really reliable yet. So everywhere I go, I end up renting a bike. And rental bikes are terrible. They're just like not well maintained.
They're just not.
So I don't know. I think maybe sometimes about bringing my own bike, but that's also a giant hassle.
It'll get figured out eventually. But awesome. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you want to make sure that we talk about or plug or whatever before we wrap this thing up?
Come to RubyConf 2023. November 13th to 15th, 2023. It's in 3 weeks or 2 weeks. It's going to be really interesting and great. And I think it'll be fun. RailsConf 24 will be in my hometown of Detroit next year. I think it's May 7th. We're going to have the website and ability to purchase tickets by the time RubyConf happens. So that'll be cool. If you have feedback for me, you can send me an email at my first name at rubycentral.org. I would love to hear from you, even if it's that we are doing something bad and we need to do a better job, do more of this, less of that. Or if you have volunteer offers or you have a cool idea for something that we could do, let me know. I'd love to hear it. You know, we're a community organization. We serve the people in the Ruby community, which is you and everybody else. So whatever we can do to do that would be awesome. I would love to hear from all of you. And if you have the means, sign up as a member. You can, I think it's at rubycentral.org. There's the sign up button. It makes a big difference for us in terms of our sustainability. But thanks very much for having me and hosting. And also thanks for just putting Ruby content out in the world.
I try. Very little of it, but I'm trying. And I appreciate you listening. I will have those links in the show notes. How are other ways for people to get a hold of you or follow you on the social medias? Which ones are you on?
I am only on Mastodon now.
Okay.
For capital R reasons. I'm on the ruby.social.
Yeah.
/others. I'm not sure. But that's usually where I hang out. I've been really enjoying the lack of ads.
Yep. That's definitely a bonus of Mastodon amongst other things. But cool. I will have all of those little things in the show notes. Everything that we talked about will be linked in some capacity. And yeah, I hope to see everybody at RubyConf in 2023 in sunny San Diego. It'll be great. Good times. And I'll see you there, I'm sure.
Yeah, let's get together. We'll have a beverage.
Yeah, sounds great to me. All right. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Drew.